Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Hey, Fruities! We want to announce that our Fruit Loops Video Club is coming up at the end of this month for our $12 and up patrons.
And in our video club, you get to consume the content at your leisure, so watch the documentary or whatever it is we're reviewing on your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to join us to talk about it.
Yep.
Or true crime or whatever we want to, really.
That's right. It's a fun time. It's also a safe space. And if you've ever been like in your car listening to a podcast and be like, no, Wendy, you got that fact wrong. And then violently bang your hands and wrist on the steering wheel. Has that happened to you?
Yeah. If that's ever happened to you, well, join our video club because that'll be a thing of the past.
Woo!
No more screaming into the abyss and risking wrist injuries.
Oh, Lord.
Because you can scream at Wendy's face in real time.
Give it to me. So if you're interested in joining us, check out our Patreon page for more details. And there you also have access to our past episodes ad-free, plus literally hundreds of hours of bonus content.
Yeah. And next up is a 2023 documentary called I Got a Monster, which we'll be talking about on Sunday, April 30th.
Ooh, can't wait. So you might be asking yourself, Self, what are they telling me all this? And, well, this week's episode is a taste of one of our previous video clubs.
Yeah.
Look, if we're being honest, it's all Florida's fault.
Yeah,
and because of Florida, we just need a short break, okay?
Yeah, I actually don't know if that's 100% true, but don't fact check us. And we hope you enjoy this episode, and we also hope you'll join us on the next video club.
That's right. So until then, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Welcome to Fruit Loops Video Club with me, Wendy. Beth is over there. Minnie's down there. That's the way they show up on my Zoom. I don't know what it looks like for everybody else. And we're just really grateful for our Patreon supporters. And we hope that you like our discussion about this documentary, which was suggested to us by Mean Green Marlene, a returning Patreon champ. And it is called The Incident at Oglala, which is a 1992 documentary by Michael Apted. He's dead. Narrated by Robert Redford. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yep.
You did? Okay.
Well, it said so. I wouldn't have known it except that it said so.
Thanks, Wikipedia. Oh, it said so at the beginning?
I don't know if it did or not, but when
you say this is Robert Redford and I'm
no, I don't think no, so. No. It was just like in the ad for the
In the description. Oh,
okay.
The description. So,
I didn't notice that until like the second time I watched it. So the film documents the deaths of two Federal Bureau of Investigations agents named Jack Kohler and Ronald A. Williams. And when you there's mistakes from the beginning. First of all, assigning these two very young agents to this part of the world I also think was a mistake, dumb. But we'll get into that.
Oh, so much. Yeah.
Yeah. On the Pine Ridge.
Oh, in Marlene is here.
Oh, yay.
Here she comes.
Oh, good. Yay. There she is.
I'm so excited to see her.
Yeah. This was a good one.
Yeah, this was an excellent documentary.
This one pissed me off instead of making me cry. So, I mean.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah.
I mean.
I was like, what? Yeah. We'll get into it.
Well,
yeah.
We'll get there. But yeah. You know how I feel about law enforcement and the FBI in particular. Yeah. So.
Hey, Marlene.
Hi,
Marlene.
Yes. Yay. Hi.
No. I'm so glad you could be here.
Can't hear you. Oh, I heard something.
Oh, I did hear something.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. So glad you could join us.
Yeah.
This was a great selection. So thank you for picking it.
Yeah.
It opened my eyes to a lot, and I'm hoping it will open.
He's still in prison.
Yeah.
I looked him up.
And
I
And I think he's, I would classify him as a political prisoner.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If I'm being honest. Yeah.
And I was shocked to see that Obama didn't even give him clemency.
I know. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We gotta have a conversation about Obama. I mean,
Mr.
you know,
Obama.
Yeah, Mr. Obama. I have several questions. no, president is perfect, but
But
he, especially
seriously.
In his second term, had an opportunity to do a lot of really great things for a lot of communities who had been ignored for a long time, including Leonard, and he didn't. So anyway, there was this massacre at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation on June 26, 1975, and also killed in the gunfire was Native American Joe Stuntz, who was a member of the American Indian Movement, AIM for short, and we'll hear that a lot throughout the documentary. Whose death prompted no legal action. Nobody was ever charged for Joe Stuntz's killing. And it examines the legal case surrounding the subsequent trials of Robert Robideau and Daryl Butler. They were acquitted. And Leonard Petlier, who was first extradited to Canada, then they kicked him out of Canada over some bullshit and sent him to trial. And the FBI got their man. And they really believe they got the right one. And that's gross because it doesn't look like that's the case.
I think they just had a good enough man to pin it on. I don't think they believe that.
You think they know that they're lying?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Okay, let's get into it. So the film also discusses tribal chairman Dick Wilson, who is, I hate to say this, he doesn't seem like a good
garbage person
to be in leadership.
No, I would pay to see a movie about that.
Yeah.
About that administration and everything that went on.
Yeah.
It sounded wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I've been watching the Chippendales documentary, like something of that magnitude on Hulu for us to binge in 6 to 8 episodes to give us an idea. But before I sort of talk through the plot, any initial thoughts that you just can't keep inside about this documentary?
Well, I grew up knowing that he's been in prison. My mom dated a dude that had AIM affiliations. Mm. I don't know, just being in that culture anyway. So you're going to know about Leonard Peltier. And I have the DVD. It's been a while since I've seen it, but something came across. I was like, oh yeah, Leonard Peltier is still in prison. And I was like, we should talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you did.
I was just going to say, when I was growing up, the way that AIM was talked about is the same way that the Black Panthers were talked about in the white culture. It was like, they're scary. Mm-hmm. They're terrorists.
Militant.
You know, militant.
Aggressive.
I had no idea until we started doing the podcast that what the Black Panthers were all about. And now what AIM is about.
Yeah. And this stuff is necessary.
To protect your community that's been oppressed, I mean, for centuries. And some guys, I think AIM was started by men who had lived off of the reservation, been imprisoned, lived in the ghettos of, you know, in other big cities in the United States, and were like, came together and were like, something emerged in them culturally that had been blocked out or missing before. And they were like, we have to fight for our people. We have to fight for our rights. We have to fight for our culture. And that's all AIM was. And it is so threatening to white, the white establishment or white supremacy. And so any reason such as criminal activity that they can use to stomp it out, they will do. Yeah. And you're right. It's not unlike the Black Panthers. And I think of AIM kind of reminded me of BLM. You know,
Black
Lives Matter, which is
the way that they talk about it now.
The way exactly. And I saw a lot of parallels therein. My first thought was, what the fuck are these two white FBI agents following a guy onto a a reservation just because of cowboy boots?
That was shocking.
Like cowboy boots. Note that I took. I said, I wrote down, I have a hard time believing the agents went in there about a pair of stolen boots. Why were they plain clothes and didn't go through the community's own police? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right. There's protocols and systems. You know,
like this, I'm like, this was a lie from the start. That is not why they went in there. That's there. That's just a lie. Like, if it doesn't sound right. Absolutely. I'm like, this. None of this makes sense. Therefore, this is not true. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
I also think that the FBI and I think law enforcement in general are just bullies, but in the FBI in particular, there
and especially at that time.
Yeah, they have killed so many figures who are the leaders of movements of people who are oppressed. And this felt no different.
Yeah.
And they have so many resources. They even have tanks and they will use them to their own advantage, again, to stop out anything that's a threat to what I would say would call as white supremacy.
White society,
That was maddening.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah, I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp.com/fruit.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I guess let's go to the beginning, unless anybody else has anything to add before we kind of go through it.
Nope. Go for it.
Okay. Well. We open up the documentary and they tell us at the beginning, there's a way you can support Leonard by watching till the end. And interesting fact, Leonard is eligible for parole in 2035. So
Well, that's when he will be released in 2035.
Oh, that's when he'll be released.
So he was eligible for parole in 1993, but he has not been released.
Yeah, he's not getting out.
He's not getting out, no. Mm-mm.
You don't think he's going to get out in 2035?
No.
He'll be dead.
Yeah.
No! He's 70-something.
Right, yeah, he's 70.
Yep. Joe Byron is in his 80s. I mean, if Joe Byron can make it, certainly Leonard can.
I feel like Joe Byron has better access to healthcare than, you know.
I was so hopeful. Yeah. Oh, my God. I have not much to look forward to on this dumpster fire of a planet. I was looking forward to Leonard getting out. Damn it. All right. Well, so we open with that. And then there is Spotty Jimmy Eagle. A woman said that she was at her grandmother's house all day with one of the people who was involved. And they saw these people coming up and they were unfamiliar with who these motherfuckers were. And somebody said they didn't expect to be shot or they didn't expect anybody to shoot them. But a lot of the residents of the reservation were like, we didn't know these people. We'd never seen these cars before. They were wearing plain clothes, blah, blah,
How are
blah.
They supposed to know they're FBI agents?
It was a hostile. It was a hostile environment anyway.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because they talk about the violence and the unsolved murders that were within the community of this reservation. But it was like they were putting all the blame on the community for what had happened, like these murders that were unsolved, which bothered me.
Yeah, it was bullshit.
Yeah. And it was clearly the community was neglected by the government and by the president of the tribe, Mr. Dick Wilson. So it felt really victim blamey at some point. So the agents, they looked like little children is one of my notes. Those two FBI agents were very young looking.
Yeah.
And then somebody said by them going in there, it was like they committed suicide. Like it was a suicide mission entering the reservation. And the indigenous people were like, why the fuck would feds surround a place with mostly women and children? We're not doing anything here. We just
reason they have been for hundreds of years, maybe. I don't know.
That's another excellent point. Yeah. Because I guess Wilson was like doing really shady deals with like land, selling it to this person or that person for monetary gain. And then is her name Myrtle, who they threatened? She was a witness.
Later on down the line.
Yeah. They threatened to take her kids away, which is, we've seen the colonizers do this in the past. So we shouldn't be surprised, but it is really, really fucked up. Oh, well, are you going to say something, Marlene?
Oh, I was like, not only that, there was like resources too. There's valuable resources that they were trying to mine and get in on. And that's what Dick Wilson was trying to get in on too. Instead of keeping the land sacred, he's like, oh, we can make money. Or, you know,
he could make money.
Yeah, there was a schism between the traditionalists and people like Dick Wilson, who wanted to make lots of money and more aligned with the white culture.
Yeah, and that division that was created between indigenous people is really the fault of the colonizer.
Yes, right? Absolutely. And, right, I mean, it wouldn't have happened if
absolutely
without the colonizers.
They it kept popping into my head that to this day, you know, people talk about, and when I say people, I mean white people, talk about the people I know talk about a lot of the poverty that still exists to this day among people living
in the reservations.
And they say that it is because the government the government money that's given to the bands or the tribes is not trickling down through the tribal or band leaders. I don't know if that's the case. All I know is that that's what white people think is the cause of the poverty. But again, that shifts the blame once again onto
the victim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's actually true. I'd be interested to hear from somebody with direct experience whether or not that's true.
We get that a lot here because in Oklahoma, a lot of tribes have their own casinos. And that's what I hear all the time. Like, well, don't y'all get casino money? Don't you get money from the government all the time? Like, no. Like when I was in school, your tribe will provide you with some school money for clothes. You get school supplies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as far as getting money from the tribe, like what we recently did, I think the U.S. gave a grant to a bunch of natives and they just divvied it up. Mm-hmm. So, like, we have been getting a little bit more help than usual. But the last time I got help from the tribe, I turned 18. They gave me $1,000. So it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that
so
fixes
like,
everything.
I don't get money all the time. Some tribes right. do, though. Some tribes do a little bit better for themselves with the other commodities that they're invested in, whether it be cattle or they got oil on their land. So they get mineral rights. Mm. Therefore, they get what they call per cap.
Yeah.
Okay.
So forth, so forth.
Do you but think yeah. there's a lot of corruption in tribal leadership? Or
oh, yeah, definitely. You if you work in the office, like everyone that works on council or anything, they help out their family. They all got nice cars. Mm. And I'm like, where's all this money going to? Especially when it comes to like the winter or like, the summertime. Elders need propane to keep their houses warm, or they need like to come out there and fix their AC or just something to help out the community instead of just
and they're not
taking care of their little inner circle.
Inner circles. Yeah.
Right.
And it seems so that was another thing that kind of popped up in the documentary as well, that there seemed to also be a division based on how basically how white you were, you know. So like people who were a higher percentage Caucasian were getting more and people with less percentage Caucasian were getting less. Do you feel any of that?
Not exactly. It might be the other way around. Like the whole blood quantum thing is a whole colonizer thing too.
Yeah,
we're the only race to acid carry. I wish I had my tribal ID.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Like, it is. You have to have a card to show how much percentage you are.
But, oh my God.
Like, I feel like, you know, if I went to 23andMe and pulled out my percentage of this and that, the other, and if I had to carry that around and show it all the time, I'm like, what the fuck?
What? Yeah.
It's only horses and dogs. And Native Americans
have
to carry around these cards.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
I never thought of it that way before. Oh my
God. That's pretty fucked up. Yeah.
It is pretty fucked up.
Jesus. Yeah.
God, I hate it here.
Can I be excused?
The reasons to hate this place just keep piling up.
Oh my God. Well,
the whole start of that too, though, with the whole blood quantum thing was to, like I said, it's like in reversal, like the less native that you had, the less they're like, well, you don't need that much since you're not. And whatnot. And then some tribal members, I know how they are like that too. Like, well, they just think about blood quantum. They're like, oh, well, I'm full blood. You're half.
So there's a kind of a hierarchy going on.
Yeah. Some of them do. Some of them will do that. They're like, well, I'm full blood or whatever. Mm. But yeah, it's.
People figure out just so many ways to exclude each other or put each other down. And it's just like,
terrible.
I suck. I hate humans. And yet I am one. I hate myself. This sucks. Can I be a bird?
I hate it because I think in every BIPOC community there is this element of colorism, you know, how close can you identify with the colonizer, and those people tend to have more advantage economically, socially, or what have you. And then the darker of us, the, you know, less white of us have additional obstacles. So just hearing about it makes me mad. So these two baby FBI officers go on this reservation looking for somebody who's allegedly stole cowboy boots. And the accounts are from most of the people there were that the shooting most likely came from the officers first.
Right.
And then the indigenous people on the reservation just had to defend themselves. Yeah. So there are guys like coming. I forgot to say that the reservation, they contacted AIM and said, we're having all these problems and we need your help. So AIM was like, hell yeah, we'll help you guys. So they camped out. They, you know, set up shop on the reservation. And when they were needed, they showed up with their weapons and defended the community that was there from these unknown white devils. So this gunfight ensues and these two FBI agents are left dead. And then Joe, who was the young indigenous person, I think he was in his early 20s, was also killed. And so they had been hit by gunfire. The people had no idea who these intruders were. And when the indigenous people, the men who were protecting the community, made their way towards the cars, there were several more shots fired. And then Williams raised his hand, and the way somebody described, he raised his hand and he was shot through his hand. A bullet went through his head.
Oh, yeah.
And the back of his head was gone. And then Fuller was shot in the top of the head and then the neck, and it removed the bottom part of his jaw.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but I love
you. Love that. Yeah.
Love the details. Yeah.
So there was one indigenous guy, and I can't remember his name, but he's the longer, skinnier, lankier one who was acquitted. But he was like, at that moment, we knew basically we were fucked. Our lives were transformed from that moment on.
Robert Dew?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That is the name. Thank you. And so then I guess agents swarmed upon the property because they had heard the two agents who were there had no business being there that, you know, were under fire. Copy, 10-4. They're after us, blah, blah, blah. So then Leonard Peltier said he thought they were all going to die. He said that they should go back to their camp and figure out where to go from there. He said they all prayed really, really hard for Joe. They knew Joe was dead. They prayed for his spirit to have a good journey. And they also prayed for the spirits of the agents too. Like, come on. I mean, this is one distinction I would love to make between BIPOC people and white law enforcement is the humanity that we are able to display when they are not. And that felt like a moment of humanity being displayed by praying for essentially your enemy.
Everybody, yeah.
For everybody. So then they brought up Wounded Knee, which was a few years prior when there were heavy exchanges of gunfire. One Indian person was shot. And then they gave a statistic that in the 1970s, there were 10,000 Lakota Sioux who lived on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And before the shootout at Jumping Bull, the reservation had the highest per capita murder rate in the United States in 1975. And we know, us fruities know, there are many reasons for that. It's not necessarily because of the people there. We talked about in the last documentary that we watched that there is this federal tribal legal maze to sort through. And there's also the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous people that just go unsolved. And we have campaigns about it now, but we didn't in the 1970s. And so we have to believe that this problem has existed for a very long time. That was my thought on that. And then the killing per William Muldrow, who was the U.S. Commissioner on Civil Rights. He was like, okay, yeah, they had a high murder rate and they had a high crime rate. I don't know who started shooting or what started the shooting, but it's not surprising that an incident might occur under the circumstances, given the level of anxiety, fear, and terror that the people on the reservation had. And then we hear from Dennis Banks, who's the co-founder of AIM, and he talked about the reservation being a war zone. This was another statistic they gave us, that Pine Ridge was, at the time, the poorest reservation in the United States. And I think that made them easier to ignore, if I'm being honest. And let's see, James Abarez, who used to be a U.S. senator from South Dakota, admitted there was just neglect by the government and more poverty. But he didn't mention anything about what he tried to do about it as, you know, a senator from there. And then he talked about the loss of hope and just the sense of despair and defeat that the people felt. And then Leonard gets on there and says, you know, he expressed that his people were like, wow, this is the rest of our lives. This is what there is for us on the reservation. And then there was some really bleak shots of like dusty, just like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was just dusty and kids playing, and you could see the kids playing, but you know,
they always just talking about the loss of hope. Like, yeah, this is it. This is all we get.
This is it. Yep. This is all we get.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
And hi, true crime fans.
We're the co-hosts of She Goes By Jane. Every week, we'll be covering the story of a missing or unidentified woman in the United States.
Stories you may have heard before.
And ones whose stories didn't make it into the news.
We've been covering these stories for a while, first in Amy's book of poetry, Doe.
And then in Vanessa's documentary, She.
But now we want to share them with you here on She Goes By Jane.
And each week we'll be joined by a special guest who will read a poem in honor of the women we talk about. Can we say who?
We can say who. We'll be joined by actresses like Coco Jones and Gabrielle Ruiz.
And musicians like Stephanie Quayle and Kelly Moneymaker, along with authors like Louise Penny.
And Catherine McKenzie.
So check out She Goes By Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or check out Evergreen Podcasts and their true crime channel, Killer Podcasts.
We can't wait to bring you these stories.
And then they brought up the blood thing, which we talked about. And then you get the two factions, the traditional versus the progressive, the mixed blood versus the full blood, and the traditional people with traditional beliefs. And then the other people who were, somebody described in the documentary as United States puppets. And to the white man, if you were half white with a white side, then the government was like way into you. But if you weren't, then they were less so. And then we meet Richard Wilson, who at first was on the tribal council, but then he gets elected to president of the tribal council. And I don't know a lot about how that works, but my impression is that there is a lot of support. You know how the U.S. government fucks up other people's governments?
Oh, yeah.
We do it so often and so
well. All the time, yeah.
I suspected that the U.S. government had a hand in inserting Wilson into power. Yeah. Did anybody else get that vibe? Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to get at when I was talking about the percentage of Caucasian, you know, versus not Caucasian. It was like, those are the people that would be more likely to get into higher positions of power, I would think, because they would have external support from the colonizer government.
Exactly. Yes. External support. And we'll take care of you if you take care of us. Yeah. Scratch our backs, we'll scratch yours. And from the documentary, it seemed pretty obvious that Wilson was getting a lot of support from people who were outside of his community that he was supposed to be supporting and leading and helping. And he wasn't.
He was
in charge of all the money and he was in charge of all the jobs, and he only gave them to his friends and his family. What the fuck? And so the perception was that his administration was just trying to enrich himself. Not a perception. It actually looked like fact. I saw it with my eyes. And then so he worked closely with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And I also don't know a lot about the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but I suspect that there are not a lot of Indigenous people calling the shots at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Just based on what I saw in this documentary, which I would love to be corrected and wrong, but my notes say, fuck those people. Now, people on the reservation were not happy with Rick, and or not Rick, Dick was like, he had these goons, and there's an acronym that the goons stand for. When I heard goons, I was like, oh, it's a fun word for people who like to harass and beat other people up. But it actually stands for, goon is an acronym for, what is it?
Guardians of Oglala Nation.
Oglala Nation. Thank you. Yeah. And
the goon squad.
And I couldn't tell because they interviewed people from the area who were part of the goon squad. Some of them looked very white to me. So I don't know if they had any connection with the reservation other than they were hired by Dick to do fucked up shit to the Indigenous people on the reservation.
Yeah, that was my impression.
Yeah. And there were survivors.
They were mercenaries, basically.
Yeah. Survivors who told stories of losing loved ones, family members, children.
Yeah. To it was really sad.
It was terrorism. It was just terrorism. Like, you do what we say or this shit's going to happen to you.
Yeah. And it just seems like I can't believe people can do that and go unanswered. And one very disturbing scene was a gentleman. He looked like he had a perm. I don't know if it was a perm or not, but he was like, sometimes it would get out of hand, like with a big old smile on his face. Like, oh my God. I was really horrified by that guy and his statement. And it was, you could tell, I'm sure nobody got in trouble for what they did. what the goons did.
We didn't hear anything about anybody getting in trouble.
At least we didn't see it in the documentary.
Yeah, my mind kept going back to what we were talking about on the last meeting, that, you know, white people can go into reservations and commit crimes and they can't be prosecuted.
Yeah.
So what the fuck?
I'm still asking what the fuck? Yeah.
I know.
So it's kind of like that, you know, and then my mind just kept going around. But, you know, these guys who had no business being there went there, got killed. I mean, you know, we never want to say it's a good thing that somebody got killed. But I'm also like,
They had no business being there.
But they could go in and pull these guys out and put them on trial.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
But inequity. People can go in there and kill people and they can't be prosecuted. I don't understand. Like, how?
Right.
Fair justice system.
It's completely unfair.
It's not.
That justice bitch is supposed to be blind, but she's not. And they talked about the list of Indigenous people who have died. And two FBI agents were killed because they started shit. You know, there's an old African-American saying, don't start nothing, won't be nothing. And they started something.
Yeah.
And they lost their lives. But it was like the value of those two individuals' lives meant so much more.
Much more and than all of the other people who had died there combined.
Yeah,
exactly. And there was this enormous campaign, people with index cards and all kinds of red string trying to point the dots at any brown person who was there that day. Yep. They brought in Myrtle. They brought in, who else did they bring in? Oh, what'd she say? Sorry, I saw a pop-up from Bryn.
And
I wanted to read it. Oh, it's pretty identical to the neocolonialism that's talked about in other formerly colonized countries. In my lit degree, I had a lot of focus in post-colonial literature, and I was always surprised they never included any literature by North American Indigenous authors. It felt like a weird separation to me.
Me too.
Throughout my education career, and a lot of our textbooks come out of Texas, and you know, I think there's a reason for that. But
I don't think they think of it as being like formerly colonized. I don't think that they have an understanding that.
Well, the thing is that this particular like professor, she was kind of a badass. Like she was a white lady from South Africa who actually had to flee the country during apartheid for protesting.
Wow.
So like she was on a level.
Yeah.
But when I asked her about it, she didn't really have an answer. It almost seemed like she hadn't thought about it.
Yeah.
Considered it.
And this was at a small liberal arts college.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's interesting.
And I thought maybe a little, are there like Native studies classes that would maybe take that role? But you're not required to take those. Like you're required to take English classes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And does that keep the separation between like this is a past problem or not bringing it into like current time? I don't know. I didn't take any of the classes because I couldn't fit them in.
Right. Yeah. Because they weren't required. I think that's an absolutely valid point to the perpetuation of people just not realizing what's really going on.
Yeah.
And
they got to offer it. So they say, well, it is an option.
it is an option. But can I fit it? Can you fit it in? Is the person teaching it going to be competent? And am I going to have enough resources to get an adequate understanding of what's really going on here? And I think that it's a detriment to all of us to not understand where we came from. Because I don't know if you noticed, this shit is repeating itself.
Thank you for saying that, Bryn, because I think one of the reasons that it's not talked about as formerly colonized is it's still colonized.
Yeah,
it's currently colonized.
And that's a lot of the neocolonialism writings, it's really interesting. But I have to space it out with some fluff reading because it's very rarely a good
time. Heavy,
but it's really important. I still have a lot of those books.
Oh, shout out some of the names. Next time you know where to find us.
One of my favorites, which, Wendy, I think you for sure would get a huge kick out of, is called The Lunatic.
The Lunatic.
Oh. Yeah, it's really funny. It's a Caribbean author. I'll find it. I'll drop it in the chat.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, please do. Yeah, no, we love reading materials. I hope there's an audiobook. Anyway. Isn't it very slow?
Maybe I'll just read it to you.
Yeah,
can you read do a dramatic
bedtime story? Yeah,
we'll do it. Get Patrick reading. Stewart to read it to you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I like where this is going. I am just really, really grateful that you brought that up, Bryn. Like, yeah. My mind is exploded. The idea that people haven't thought about the fact that where they are is still colonized.
Yeah.
And we're all victims of it. And we can either close our eyes and not be woke, as people are weaponizing woke.
Yeah.
Like the opposite of woke
so
is asleep.
Stupid. Yeah.
Is that what you want to be?
You really
like,
want to be asleep?
Life? Yeah. No, I oh my God, I have goosebumps. I'm sweating in weird places. So thank you.
AM, the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3AM, the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.
So there's the initial gunfight, then there's a secondary gunfight for I don't know why. It's like the FBI was like, we have to send 350 agents to attack this community of people who were minding their beeswax. And for no reason at all, there's another gunfight. And then the investigation starts and the prosecution starts formulating their whodunit theories. And they identify three indigenous men. And I love this, that the community was like, hey, I'm going to hide you here. I'm going to like, come stay with me. I'm going to keep you safe. So they all like looked out for each other when this big, bad FBI fuckery was going on trying to get them. But eventually the FBI did catch up to
Robert Robidoux.
Yes.
And Daryl.
Yes. Butler. Thank you. Thank you. So they caught up to both of them. One was found at another reservation. The second gentleman was found. He was like driving in the Midwest with a car full of like weapons and explosives.
Oh, yeah.
And the car exploded. And he would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for those stupid kids. But they discovered him because of the explosion. Right. It's hard to maintain your cover after that. And then they found Leonard in Canada, but he was like, I'm going to use this colonizer system to my advantage. You're not going to extradite me. And so he's, you know, mounting his defense for himself in Canada. Meanwhile, they're like, we got to punish somebody. We got to give somebody a Hertz donut. You know, we're the FBI. So they were like, we wanted to try all three of these dudes together. We can't. This will have to just be the next best thing. And they tried them in South Dakota. And the judge was like, he was a good judge. He was fair to the defense. And every motion they filed, he granted it. And the dudes ended up getting acquitted.
Yeah, they mounted a self-defense.
Exactly.
Defense, yeah. Which makes total sense to me. I mean, these two white dudes come onto their property. They don't know who they are. And they have guns.
Yep.
Of course. I don't think they even knew they were white in the beginning anyway.
Oh, right? Really? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was just like someone just coming blazing in here. And like I said, it could have been the goons. They didn't
know. Been anybody.
Yeah, they didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the self-defense, and there was one white guy. I don't know what his name is. I don't care. He was an asshole. I hated him.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. You know exactly who I'm talking about.
That guy.
That guy.
I don't.
You don't.
What is
that? The one guy is like, that self-defense is ridiculous.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was a dick.
I didn't know. That guy,
the same one that said tried to claim that the jury had been...
Yes, I think so.
Yes, that AIM had
that
showed up at their houses.
Full of shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he does not. He should not. I'm like terrified for anybody who. Yeah, but he's in a position of authority and power. Maybe he's retired and dead now, and we don't have to worry about it. But I am concerned for people that he is seeking justice for, because I think he's a lawyer. And so they get acquitted. Everybody's like, "Whoa, didn't see this coming." Because people mentioned being concerned about these indigenous men. They have long hair. They don't live like us. They don't live where we do. And they were worried about what the jury would do. And we don't see this very often. So I was glad the jury got it right. This was self-defense, and really happy. Yep. Yes. But then it's Leonard's turn, and Leonard's like, "You're not going to extradite me." And then the government was like, "Yes, we will. We found Myrtle, your girlfriend."
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ. That is girl. She was like, I never met him neither, but the FBI does this and law enforcement does this a lot. And they seem to have an easier time doing it to people who are disenfranchised, poor, and of color. We're going to take your kids away. You're going to be in jail. You're going to lose your job. So you better cooperate.
What choice did she? She had no other choice.
She didn't have a choice.
To say exactly what they told her to say. Like, what the hell is she supposed to do? Yeah. And all I kept seeing throughout this documentary as well, were all these male voices controlling the narrative and all these women looking on like, what the fuck, you guys? Like, can't they just have a life?
Yeah.
Oh, I was say, wasn't she like mentally incompetent too, a little bit?
They said that a lot. I don't think that's a term we would use today.
No, I think she was probably just challenged.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe had some learning difficulties.
But still a vulnerable person.
But it would have been enough for them to take her children away if they pushed.
Oh, yeah.
And so 3 affidavits later, and all the affidavits said 3 different things, the Canadian government was convinced, and they were like, okay, you can have him. And
that seems legit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally. So then Leonard goes back to the United States, and the trial this time takes place in a different venue in Fargo, North Dakota, with a different judge who's more plaintiff friendly. And I mean, before we even get to the trial part, everybody who commented was like, we knew he was going to be found guilty. We just knew it. They needed to have somebody to pin this crime on, and it was him. But then we come to find out that the bullet is an issue because the evidence doesn't add up. The car that they were following onto the premises, I know what a truck is. I know what a van is. Mm-hmm. I know what a Suburban is, and I'm not in the FBI. So how can
they were trying to make a square peg fit into a round hole. Yeah.
Never in 100 years would I have referred to that vehicle as a pickup truck.
Also, this started over cowboy boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That was something.
I actually trouble focusing probably a good 30-40 minutes into the video because my brain was like, this story makes no sense.
This sounds like a job for the FBI.
Hello, FBI, my boots are missing.
Somebody stole my cowboy boots.
After him, quick. Not your cowboy boots.
I also didn't know this, is that there's FBI like field offices all over the place.
Yeah.
And these guys were young and new in their careers, and maybe it was a less desirable beat to patrol.
Yeah, could be.
And so my impression also was that they were looking for like action. Get their name on the map they could go straight to Washington, D.C. and work for Joe Biden. But they made a big ass mistake.
I think they knew what they were getting into. They're like, oh, we can say we're coming in here for these boots, but it's a bunch of radicals there. And it's a hot zone. Mm. And surely.
Well, it was really stupid.
I feel like there was some white arrogance.
Yeah, poking the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully agree that the whole boot thing was just made up as a, purported reason why they went there.
Did anybody ever find any boots?
They never said anything about the finding the boots.
No update on the boots.
No.
What you got, Marlene?
After the shooting, Peltier, Robidoux, and Butler were arrested, and Jimmy Eagle was dismissed for lack of evidence. So it's just like,
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little sus.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the documentary, we find out that there's a Mr. X who said he did it.
He's the one who killed the agents. Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. X's story makes way more sense than any of the other stuff.
Wow. Yeah. I wish they wouldn't have waited till the very end to tell us it, but it kept me watching. It kept me engaged. But I was like, why doesn't he come forward? And I guess maybe, I don't know.
Because he doesn't want to go to jail.
Yeah, but obviously. I also really, really respect
Peltier.
I'm not good at French. Yeah. Leonard Peltier's stance, like, I'm not out here to bring other people down or have somebody else take this sentence just because I want to get out. I don't think that's the right thing to do. And I don't know. I would definitely not do that, but I respect it. I respect his position. Even his daughter was like, I think it's stupid what my dad is doing, but he's not going to change his mind. And
I think what it is that this Mr. X is somebody that Peltier thought would be better equipped to affect social change, and that having that person in prison would be a greater detriment to the community than him being imprisoned. And I think that that's why he doesn't
I didn't think about that, but I love it. I mean, I love it for the, I love it for the community, right? Like,
well, I mean, I hope that's the case, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Either way, you got to respect that he's not willing to snitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the greater good.
Snitches.
Yep, that's right.
But I also think Leonard's story, I didn't know anything about this until Marlene suggested the documentary, but I feel like his case is a form of activism in itself.
Yeah.
Like the whole story. And I think we all can learn a lot from this situation and from, you know, the position that Leonard finds himself in. Because I was listening to a podcast with some lawyers who defend tribes and talked about this case and how it is like a beacon for people who are fighting for Indigenous communities. And I thought that was super rad.
Yeah.
Any other, we have 8 minutes left.
I just kept thinking this was awesome. Yeah. I kept thinking at the end, if he hadn't gone to Canada and he had went to trial with the other ones, and he probably would have been acquitted. And that makes me sad.
Maybe, but I think someone had to be a scapegoat. Someone was going to have to pay for this.
Somebody.
Yeah. So if it wasn't him, it probably would have been somebody else. They probably would have dragged somebody
else.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
that's what the FBI does.
You're right.
They do it very well. Yeah.
Yeah, it was 100% pinned on him. Like, there was zero evidence.
There was, it was just amazing.
They manufactured evidence.
The gun, the gun evidence, the bullet, the ballistics.
They had that one con who was studying it, and also the Manson murders.
Oh, yeah.
And his kick-ass landlady was like, this guy's, like, why are you taking him seriously?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I was also going to say that I wonder what came of Myrtle. Is she okay? Myrtle Poorbrown?
So.
She stuck out in my mind a lot.
Yeah,
that was just, it was just a really interesting doc. I learned so much. So thanks y'all for watching it with me.
Yeah. Thanks for suggesting it, Marlene.
Yes, thank you, Marlene. It was a great one. Any parting thoughts or feelings or comments?
It made me really sad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Oh, okay. So we were talking before Bryn and maybe Marlene got on. He gets out in 2035. That's not that long.
It's pretty long. 1 year, 78 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. He is. Let's see. Yeah, he was born in 1944. So, yeah. 23.
I do have a quote that he says.
He'd be 91. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said, the only one thing is sadder than remembering you were once free, and that's forgetting you were once free.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wow.
Forgetting what it's like to be free.
Yeah. Wow. Now,
are you reading a book by the...
No. It's my podcast notes.
So okay.
I know you do a horror movie podcast. Can you shout it out for us?
Yeah, shout it out.
Horror Movie Warriors.
Horror Movie Warriors.
Okay.
Yeah, really cute. Subscribed. I really like that little community. But yeah, I take notes. So I took notes for this one too.
Love it. Okay. Well, I can't think of anything else to add other than this was great. Everybody looks gorgeous. And yeah, it is just really, really wonderful to be in community with y'all over something that we all dig, which is true crime and justice and stuff. So thank you all. I love you all so much. And I think I'm going to go to sleep now.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Love you all. Bye, Fruities. My notes say, fuck those people.
I hate humans. And I am one. I hate myself. This sucks. Can I be a bird?
Because I don't know if you noticed, this shit is repeating itself. Yeah. That justice bitch is supposed to be blind, but she's not.
So what the fuck?
I'm still asking what the fuck?
Yeah. I know.
Also, this started over cowboy boots. That made me do a double take.
Sounds like a job for the FBI.
Hello, FBI. My boots are missing. Hey, we got to give somebody a Hertz donut. You know, we're the FBI. Oh, my God. I have goosebumps. I'm sweating in weird places. So thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The truth about the Haditha massacre has been covered up, but not anymore.
I know you know what happened.
They went into houses and killed women and children.
What are you thinking?
What a mess.
U.S. Marines murdered innocent civilians in cold blood.
And at the center of it all
is 25-year-old Sergeant Frank Wooderich.
And me. Murder in House 2. A new podcast from Crowd Network.